All right. Well, after six, quote unquote, meeting's in order, and everybody had an opportunity to look at last month's minutes. Sure. Can I give you a second? Okay. Well, if everybody took a look,
I move that we accept the minutes.
Okay. All right. Very good. Okay. So we will move on. We have a pretty full agenda tonight. Actually, we're fairly late on legislative business, but we have a number of speakers, guests here. So I thought, like we did last time, for those of us that are here for the first time, we'll go around the room and introduce ourselves. I'm Craig Lopez. I represent District 14. That's kind of Chicago and Worthing, and I chair this committee.
I'm Legislator Herb Litz. I represent District 9, which is Eastern Plattekill and Western Town of Lloyd.
Carl Valfilio, Town of Esopus, District 8.
Chris Allen, I represent District 2, Sorbetes and Malvern.
Dave Scarpino, CEO, Health Alliance.
Tom Cajun, Legal Women Voter, and I have a proposal to present tonight.
Nettie Tom, Legislative Employee.
Lee King, Legal Women Voter.
Jeanette Provenzano, District 7, but I'd like to think I represent the full city of Kingston.
Steve Rice, I'm Chair of the Ulster Trails Advisory Team.
American
here
in
the minority council.
Okay, very good. I thought tonight we'd start with kind of Cajun, being that you are sharing the projector right later this evening with the law enforcement committee.
Good.
So, and you have Safe Talk, it's an anti-bullying initiative?
Yeah, anti-bullying and a reporting, a means of reporting issues and push that. So there's no direct contact with the reporter. I'm with the League of Women Voters, but this has nothing to do with the League. This really comes out of the Public Safety Committee that met for about a year last year, and a lot of communities across America has it already. What it provides is a way of fellow students, teachers, neighbors, friends, to report issues that an adolescent might be going through. Not even an adolescent, any student might be going through. We're all familiar with the way the media is reporting today. School shootings, adolescent suicides, you know, escalating drug problems, sexual predators, intimidation, bullying. And this would give... let me go back a little, 1 second, Dan. What do you got? The follow-up to these major problems, they found that some people knew some things, and others, they just didn't want to get involved, so they never reported it to anybody. But there was enough information to know that this child was in trouble prior to the suicide or the violence or whatever. So tonight is a very quick video on the subject that I'd like you to see.
Today, 64 million grade school students will attend class. Your child is one of them. Did you know 1 in 3 of them will be bullied this month? 6 in 10 will see someone be bullied today. But 85% of the time, no one intervenes. But that's just the beginning. Today, more than 290,000 weapons will be brought to school. That's about 1 weapon for every 221 students. Odds are that someone has a weapon in your child's school today. And odds are that another student knows about it. 92% of guns confiscated at school are the result of student tips. But that's only 1% of all weapons brought to school. $160,000 students are skipping class. class right now because of the fear of physical harm. It's not that students don't want to speak up. They just need an easy and confidential way they can report concerning behaviors without the fear of peer retaliation. The Safe to Talk Foundation is decreasing bullying, drugs, suicide, and school violence by giving students across the country anonymous tip lines. Protect your child and make sure your school is involved. Visit safetotalk.org to help.
There's a number of organizations that do this.
That's amazing. I just want to say, see, shows you how much you could say in a short period of time. That was incredible.
Yeah, I'm going for the record.
Wow.
I spoke to Ulster County Mental Health Association. They're willing to take it on, providing they know what they're getting into and if the costs are okay. I would recommend them because they're multi-county and we might be able to provide more services to the kids and at a lower cost. But I believe that I would recommend that this committee request that the county executive get the planning department to research the possibilities and find out more about what can be done about this. That's basically what I think the committee should do, you know, just find out more about it. I believe it's a good idea, but I'm a layman. I'm out there just Google, you know, so I'm not a professional in this, but we spent about a year looking into different possibilities on how to keep our community more safe than it is now. Anyway.
Tom, would you be talking more of something like an app?
Like no, I think it should be like a site where a kid gets the site. The site provides what questions they want answered, you know, like where did you see it? Who does it concern? Things of that nature. And then that agency would wipe out where that email came from to keep it anonymous and then refer it to whatever professionals they believe is appropriate, schools or the mental health or the sheriff's department. It should also come with a proviso that if any violence is expected within the next day or two or suicides are expected or you feel that there's a danger to call 911 immediately. So it doesn't have to be a 24/7 hotline.
Okay.
It could be done, you know, like once a day and then referred to the professionals.
So maybe you could do the hotline through the mental health?
Right.
Tom, is this Safe to Talk program, is it mainly for schools to alert the schools of the problem? Because that's what the video
it seems to be. Well. It seems to be.
Yeah, I'm looking at the
and
website.
there's another website called School Tip Line that also provides the service. And I believe they charge $1 per year per student. But I'm pretty sure you can get it cheaper than that. You know?
Because I'm here at the site and I click submit a tip, and then it tells you, asks you what category, and it's all
great,
pretty much school.
So you want to follow something like that, you know?
Fighting harassment, and the school name is required. So this is probably, you know, it's for schools, but I think that's a great idea.
Right.
We have to get the school districts on board, and we have to deal with all the school districts. So we have to talk to
but even if you, get it into one, well, if the county does it, they're going to get it whether they like it or not.
Right.
If we go through the Ulster County Mental Health Association, then they could probably, you know, help determine what way we could go through with the schools.
Right.
So somebody tips, you know, they go to the website, or it also looks like that if you pre-register, you have a little serial number that you could text. So that goes to this agency.
Right.
And then the agency contacts whoever's going to be the authority in this.
Right.
So if it's going to be the Mental Health Association of Ulster County, then somebody's got to be there to answer the hotline.
It doesn't have to be a hotline. It could be just, you know, like a website.
Monday through Friday, you know, 9 to 5. It'd have to be 24/7, I would think, because...
Yeah, because, it's up to the cost.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, you're basically not dealing with emergency situations. It's not as, like somebody believes that a shooter is going to come into school tomorrow. Then they get the, what do you call it, call 911.
Right.
This is, what do you call it?
Okay.
Yeah, they're not calling.
Little Joseph in, 401 is getting harassed by another kid. And especially today with the Internet. I mean, you've got a lot of auto shots out now. They're going to start putting the face of young girls nude that's not their body.
Right.
And it's, even though it's not believed.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to goof on the girl, and it's going to make her life miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'll kill herself.
There's a lot of suicides involving her, you know?
Yeah.
Now, do these tips go in as anonymous, or do you have to identify yourself?
No, it goes in as anonymous.
Yeah.
Right. But there's also, a PIN number that you can contact and find out what happened.
Okay.
Like, you get like a case. It becomes your case. So you sign in. You get the PIN number, and it says, this has been referred to the mental health professional in Auntie Aura's High School and also Ulster County Mental Health Association or Ulster County Mental Health Department. So the reporter knows that something's getting done.
Mm-hmm. And it would ultimately be up to the school districts in order to participate in something like this, correct?
Not really. I mean,
no.
If they do it, if you report it to them, they got to do something about it.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Okay. But I mean, they should want it. But I mean,
sure.
With the schools, like if it comes from outside the school, it's not a good idea.
Yeah.
If it's their idea, it's a good idea. But if if you can, push them along, I believe it's a good idea.
And this idea is for general public safety, not just for schools.
Right.
So then, Mental Health Association would be a good.
Right, and they're down in Orange and across the river, and so the neck could widen and become like multi-county and also cheaper.
Yeah, we definitely as their own costs are because.
So that's it. What was my time on that?
I was the victim of some pretty severe bullying from. Fifth grade, from the most part, up through eighth grade, till I got involved in martial arts, doing taekwondo. I became a black belt. I was pretty good, and I stopped getting picked on after about 2 years under my belt of that stuff. But it definitely adversely affected my life, and I hung out with the wrong crowd, became detached.
Right.
From focusing on my scholastic abilities when I should have, and it really altered my life and set me back quite a bit. But I think I did some research on childhood bullying in graduate school, and I think there's a lot of different sort of lenses that you can look at the problem through. Like one in particular, if you look at it from a legal perspective, you have physical assaults that are taking place. On school grounds, off school grounds, some bus stops,
right,
just office, at office school grounds a little bit. And if these assaults were to take place out in the general public, when you're talking about people of legal majority age status, people would be locked up
right.
and put in handcuffs, and you would be charged with, like misdemeanor or felony assault.
Right.
And since it's minority age status, if you're a minority, you really have less rights than majority status adults have, and it's just a problem. Legally they get swept under the rug. So I don't know if there were laws that were in place that made parents responsible for their minority children that are committing these acts of violence and assault on children. Perhaps parents would take more of an active role. I think incompetent parenting.
Segregate your bullies.
I think if there was more ease in a litigious based recourse for parents where they could sue school districts if their children are assaulted, I think that would maybe force parents to be and school districts to take a more active role. I think you just don't have enough eyes of enforcement in the room. Some teachers may not be overly perceptive. They're trying to manage. 20 to 40 children in a classroom,
and it's just a lot might, you know, go over their head, and they just don't see the bullying. That's what used to take place, you know, when I was bullied. There was a, you know, a few guys or a handful of guys that the school bully would sort of rotate around, and the teacher just, you know, it was kind of, she had an idea. Sometimes she would catch them, maybe 10 or 20% of the time, and the other 80 to 90% of the time they'd get away with it, whether it's a gym teacher, general classroom teacher. So, you know, it's a serious problem. And then you have, you know, you have different reactions on all ends of the spectrum. You have some victims of bullying that, you know, nowadays they take matters into their own hands and they want to, you know, kill the bully with weapons, like in Columbine, or there's other well-documented cases. You have increases in suicidal ideation where mm-hmm. some people actually carry that out instead yep. of just calling attention to the their problem, like crying out for help. And, you know, then you have other victims that might start to bully people themselves to right. lash out, you know, or the detachment where they just, you know, drop into a wrong crowd. And
but one thing this will provide is a paper trail that was reported.
Well, this is why this is such a good idea.
Absolutely.
Back in the day, you would have had an opportunity to call an anonymous tip line, sure. and it would have been followed up and something, you know. So this is an excellent idea. Something we should maybe have somebody come from the Mental Health Association, maybe sure. in about a month, or once you think we have enough. Maybe we need to talk about it a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah, you'd like the parameters. I mean, that's why the planning department, let them yeah. come up with what the options are for you to decide on. And also,
does
like,
the
with the internet, plan? Well, I don't know who else would do it.
All right. Well, we'll find out.
We'll find some other department or yourselves, whatever.
Okay.
I mean, Tom and I were both on the Public Safety Advisory Committee, and, you know, Erica was at every meeting. You know, we discussed things like this, and actually Tom brought them up, and we discussed, you know, 24-hour hotlines, phone apps, mm-hmm. Even we discussed like a two-way phone app in case it was an emergency where kids were in school and the police couldn't find them, that they'd be able to, you know, access the app and it would go to the police agencies like their GPS on their phone. I think that this is a great idea. When you get into reporting for school districts, you know, let's just say we need cooperation for the school districts. And not to say that they're not going to cooperate, you know, when they feel like there's a threat going on, but it has to be followed up past the school, too. From the school, they've got to know that there's some kind of protocol. The school needs to do some work in reporting back, I guess, to the website.
And you want to make it as easy as possible on
what the resolution
yeah,
was.
Just
yeah.
kids,
no, I know.
Just for young people.
But you want to have accountability. I mean, it's you could have 500 of these a day. I mean, Ulster County, we have about 187,000 residents. You can have 500 of these tips a day.
Well, we got 18, you only got 18,000 kids. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah, but if this is going to be for the general public,
well, right now it's for
safety.
Right now it's for the kids.
Now. Okay.
You know, because
yeah,
they have no what do you call it, ability to report.
Yeah, right.
Right.
You know.
Okay, sure.
And also, I mean, like, I mean, I'm in my community, an awful lot of kids are coming out of Auntie Aura fully addicted to heroin
yeah.
and substance abuse. I mean, it's pitiful. I mean, a lot of them, and they're not even 18 yet, and their life is over. Yeah, and they can't tell me that's not going on in the school.
Yeah.
Either they're, you know, the other kids are selling to themselves, to other children, or something's going on with our society.
Wow.
You know, I mean, and it's serious. I mean, 19, 20, and he's an addict for 10 years. So that means he starts between 9 and 12.
Oh, my God.
And there's a lot of them in Woodstock. Anyway,
wow.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Tom,
very
thank
much.
You.
Much.
Very informative. But obviously, needs a lot of discussion.
Sure.
Also, brevity. 9.3. Oh, I'll go higher than
okay.
that. Yeah.
All right, we'll move on to our next guest this evening. I'm David Scarpino, the president and CEO of the Health Alliance. This guy is Gus. The Health Alliance, the progress, and. Anything else you want to talk about?
Thanks a lot. Thank you, Greg, and thank you. I appreciate the invite to come tonight and to speak before you.
Sure, thanks.
trying to condense this into a small presentation is going to be a challenge for me, so please tell me which way you want me to go, and I'll certainly go there. I've been in this job now for about 9 months, almost 10 months. I started the end of July of last year. I've been in the Health Alliance system for almost 8 years now. I was the former chief financial officer, and I've been in healthcare since I was 16 years old, so I've had a pretty long run. But I can't tell you another time where we've seen so much changing so rapidly. So I'm going to try to take you through a few things that are going on. I'll try to use this somewhat as a guide. My priorities in terms of Health Alliance are, number one, keep the quality at a high level, which I think our quality is very good. We look at our quality scores all the time, and we do excellent. What we don't do so well is really in the patient experience and patient satisfaction. You've heard people go into the ED and complain about how they were treated, and up on the floors, we're working all the time to improve those scores. I can tell you that in the ED, we've rebounded remarkably. And in the last probably 6 months of scores, the scores have been approaching some of the highest in the country, and for that, we're very happy. On the floors, we still have some ground to make up. I'll be perfectly honest with you. It's not where I want it to be. It's got to improve. And it's really trying to differentiate between caring for people. And a nurse can care for you very well. They have to care about you. That when you come into the room or they walk into your room, that they engage with you, that they show a genuine interest, rather than just coming in to say they were in the room to make sure your vitals were okay, that they really care about you. And I think that's the differentiator when patient satisfaction scores are recorded. So those are ongoing and some progress. The other thing we have to do is we have to get to a single campus. And we've talked about this for a number of years, and I can tell you that with some of the changes going on both at the federal and state government, we are working with the Department of Health to figure out what that answer is. And I will tell you that if you do open this up, and I'll just point to this for a second, is really the top, on the right-hand side, top right quadrant, really regional delivery of health care. What we're doing is this, and this points to community physicians. We're working with our physicians to form what we call a clinically integrated organization, which allows physicians to act as if they were employed by one single employer, but to be independently owned and operated. So all the small physician groups in our community who do not want to be employed by a big medical practice. And most of our physicians have told us they do not want to. They want to remain independent. But they have to be able to do some of the initiatives in the future where they have to act as a cohesive group, and forming this organization will certainly help them. We've about 4 months into this process. We think we'll be done by probably the end of the summer, early fall. And that coupled with finding an affiliate, and it says here future affiliates, we need to partner with a larger delivery system. There's no question about it. And it's not because we're failing, but it's really because we see the future. And the future requires small hospitals such as ours to hook up with a larger system for a lot of reasons. Every single hospital in this region, anywhere from Long Island through Albany, is looking for a partner. Anybody who tells you they're not telling you the truth. Everyone is out looking. It's a question of which larger systems, what their vision is. Who do they want to partner with? As I like to tell people, we're an incredibly small tail trying to wag incredibly big dogs. So whether it's Albany Medical Center or St. Peter's, if it's Montefiore or North Shore LIJ, they're all in play because they all want a bigger system. And here's why it's important. If you go to the left-hand side where the little syringes, and really this talks about the transition of healthcare delivery over the next 10 years, our system on the left is really driven by volume. We get paid and we are incented by the number of procedures we do, the number of visits through the ED, the number of people coming into the inpatient unit. That's how we're incented. That's how we behave. Volume is good. We tend not to focus on the patient satisfaction and quality of care, and the costs, as you hear all the time, are through the roof. Everybody wants a solution to the rising health care costs. Well, the incentives are now being developed, so that all shifts. So on the right-hand side, the procedures are going to go down, patient satisfaction and quality are going to go up, and costs are going to go down. And not because we're going to ration, because we're not, but we're going to be incented a different way. And that's why we need the physicians organized, as I described earlier. We're going to get paid based on what we call shared savings, which means that, and we'll take Health Alliance because it's the easiest example, but you can look at county government, you can look at the Teachers Association and their health benefits. Each of us have about 4,500 covered lives, which is pretty big. Health Alliance, we're about $15 million in health care costs. We pay out. We're an employer as well as a provider. So with about $15 million, our objective is to reduce costs. We want to reduce the number of procedures. We want quality and satisfaction to go up. So how do we do that? It's really looking at working with physician groups, with a larger tertiary center, no matter where it is, working with a payer. In our case, it happens to be CDPHP. In the county's case, it's Blue Cross. And try to figure out, how do we reduce costs? And the way you reduce costs is you incent people, you incent doctors and hospitals, that they get to share in the savings that accrue from changing the way you deliver care. So in our case, if it's $15 million, if it's reduced to 14 or 13 or 12, the providers get to keep that money. So they're incented to do less. But they have to maintain quality, and people have to be happy with the way they're being cared for. So how do you do that? What you do is you better coordinate care. Everybody's got an electronic health record in their office, every physician. The hospitals last year installed their electronic health record. And I'm sure if you went to your doctor recently, he or she, while talking to you, had their head buried and was typing their little hearts out. Sometimes you see that as impersonal. We do it ourselves in the ED. There's a little cart that goes around and people are typing into it. But that information is really important because it goes into, it's going to go into what we call the Regional Health Information Organization, RIOs, and they'll be able to share it with people. So if you go into the hospital, someone just, and you have to approve that you're going to share your data with them, they can go into this RIO and see the last time you had a CAT scan or a lab test. So they avoid duplication, number one. Number two, they can better coordinate the care, because they know what's been done to you, and they can make sure that they take what's been done maybe a week ago, 2 weeks ago, 4 months ago, and then they can also go forward making sure that we hand you off to the next provider of care. The second thing we have to do, so information is critically important to this. The other thing we have to do is we have to find the right venue for delivery of care, and that's the cost point of view. The most expensive cost in the healthcare system is a tertiary level of care. Good Albany Med, St. Pete's, Westchester Medical Center, Montefiore, it's the highest cost. The next highest cost is the hospital, then the nursing home, then the emergency department, then the physician's office, then home. So how do we move things from the most costly to the least costly? And those are done through a series of incentives and disincentives. The federal government likes to work with disincentives, number one. If a Medicare patient is discharged from the hospital with one of five conditions, and we'll call it congestive heart failure or pneumonia, and they're readmitted in 30 days, regardless of the reason, the hospital gets penalized.
Wow.
We get penalized. It's our job to make sure that you don't come back. Think about it in the old model. I'm driven by volume. Okay, I'm going to start to do things. It's like I'm McDonald's, and I want to keep you out. That's a different business model because I'm driven by volume. I get paid by volume. But now I'm being forced through disincentives to lower the number of people. So how do I do that? I do it through a collaborative effort with, in this case, I'll use for an example, Golden Hill. Golden Hill's become a really good partner of ours because their incentives are aligned to take our business. They say, you know what, if you give us your congestive heart failures, if you give us your pneumonias upon discharge, we'll make sure they don't come back. And if they do, send them elsewhere. So they're working with us to become more subacute. We're an acute care facility. They're becoming more subacute so that they can enhance their model, thereby bringing that care to a lower cost level. Quality has to be high, satisfaction has to be good, but they become a collaborative partner. So no longer do we stand alone, we stand with another partner. That's one way. Let's take somebody who comes in with chest pain. Years ago, we would treat a chest pain 2 or 3 days. You'd go upstairs.
3 days.
Right? Mm-hmm. Not anymore, because the federal government has said those are now observation patients. 24 hours, you keep them in, you rule out a heart attack. If a heart attack is ruled out, that's an outpatient, and we'll pay you like an outpatient. We'll reduce our cost. If there are certain results that prove to be positive, you can ship them upstairs. They become an inpatient. Our revenue starts to go down. We no longer admit those patients. They're observation. You're going to hear from the Medicare population, they don't like that because they're out of pocket on an outpatient encounter goes up. If they need a 3-day qualified stay to go into a nursing home, they no longer have it. So this really hurts the senior citizens. There's not much we can do with it. We're the bearer of bad news. And the last thing they're doing from a disincentive is they said, you know, these observation patients and our the federal government's ability to go back and audit care is way too complicated, and the hospitals win way too often. So we're going to now have what we call a 2-midnight rule. If you're not in for 2 midnights, literally 2 midnights, tonight at 12 o'clock, tomorrow at 12 o'clock, we're not going to pay you because we figured you didn't need to be there. So those are coming out of the system. So you have a lot of disincentives and a lot of downward pressure to reduce volume in hospitals. The second thing that's going on from a state point of view is something called the Medicare redesign team, the Medicaid waiver, you might have heard of it, and something called DSRIP, Delivery System Redesign Incentive Program, DSRIP. It's $8 billion from the federal government to the state of New York. $8 billion. Over 5 years, its stated goal is to reduce self-pay, Medicaid, and dual eligibles, Medicare and Medicaid population, reduce admissions by 25%.
Oh, my goodness.
So we're going to get paid to keep people out of the hospital. So you can see there are downward pressures on what we are as an institution, and because of that, we're going to shrink. And two hospitals are simply too much. It's too much overhead, just like any other business. You can't have two locations with a shrinking volume, that really needs to be in one building. So the question is, which building is it and why, and how do we get our piece of that $8 billion? The $8 billion is going to be given out 50% to public hospitals, 50% to what we call safety net hospitals. We happen to be a safety net hospital because of the population we serve.
What kind of hospitals?
Safety net.
Safety net.
So it's just a designation. You have to have certain levels of Medicaid and self-pay. So how do we do it? Right now we're in the process of submitting an application to see if we would qualify. We have to do this collaboratively. It is mandated that an application that is done only by a hospital will be rejected. And what we're going to have to do is what you see on the bottom right, and we did this about 6 months ago, anticipating the changes, and what we're looking at is when it says long-term care patients, physicians, affiliates, home health partners, mental health partners, disease management, all of those folks must be part of the application. So in our case, we're going to submit an application more likely than not with Ellenville Hospital and the Institute for Family Health. It's a federally qualified health center. It is in both in Ellenville and here. It's a physician practice, predominantly with the Medicaid population. And what we're going to do is really talk about collaborative efforts. How do we keep people out of the hospital? So I always pick on somebody in the audience. I hope Nettie doesn't mind it. I'm going to pick on her. So for instance,
I'm healthy.
For instance, if she was old and not healthy.
Well, you could have picked on her.
No, I'm
not. You know, one time I did this with a really young population. It was the new leaders in the community, and Ulster Chamber of Commerce does this program. And these kids were 25, 30 years old. And I happened to make contact with somebody like Nettie, and I said, you know, for instance, if Joe has diabetes, and he goes, yep, I do, he had a pump, insulin pump.
Oh, God.
So I try to be careful what I do. But just by way of example, if people who don't like NSA and data gathering and data sharing don't like this, but it's really called population health analytics. If we're going to be at risk for the dollars associated with the care of a defined population, say you were all that defined population, we want to pick out the folks who consume the most. So we would know through data analytics, through population health metrics, and the EHRs, electronic health records, who uses the most. So we find that Nettie is a frequent flyer in a lot of facilities, because she has a lot wrong with her. So what we're going to do is a lot of care coordination. We will pay somebody. Montefiore does this. We don't have to do it with them. But Montefiore does this down in Westchester. They have 850 people, a separate organization who just does care coordination. So they watch the Netties of the world. And they make sure that we coordinate care from provider to provider. So if Nettie has diabetes, we make sure that when her labs come in and they're a little bit high, we immediately call her up and say, Nettie, we made an appointment for you to go see your physician because we want to keep her healthy. If she has congestive heart failure, and this is not a stretch, they actually do this. If she has congestive heart failure, the one way you see if she's going into failure, her heart is becoming stressed, and she might end up in the ED, she starts to gain weight because she retains water. So they ask Nettie to weigh herself every day and submit it. And when they see a trend going up, they go, Nettie, we made an appointment for you. They're keeping her. I know you don't like, a lot of people don't like this, but think about what it does.
Yeah.
We keep her out of the hospital.
Uh-huh.
We keep her out of the hospital. If you want to reduce costs, you have to keep people out of the hospital. How do you do that? You get them to the right level of care at the right time before they get sick. You keep them healthy. So you're incenting physicians. Now, physicians love this, and that's what our clinically integrated organization does. It allows physicians to participate because they're going to be incented by making sure the Netties of the world, their metrics and their outcomes are better. So quality improves, outcomes improve, you're happier because you're healthier, they get paid more by intervening. People come to us less. Think about all the people with pneumonia or congestive heart failure or hypertension or diabetes who end up in the hospital over and over again. If you could short circuit that early by care coordination, by talking to each provider, that when I finish with Nettie, I hand her off to Tom, yes, Tom, to Carl, and so on and so forth, that we make sure that we all care what happens to her because we're all getting paid based on her success. So when you start to do this in a profound manner over time, hospitals will get smaller and smaller and smaller because that's what people want us to do. And care goes more to the community-based providers and less to the hospital. Now, the paradox of this for us and the tough sell is people go, well, you're going to get smaller. Yeah. And some jobs will shrink. Yes, they will. But they're also going to grow in the what we call the medical perimeter. Because the nursing home's going to have to hire more people. The physician office is going to have to hire more people. Home health agencies are going to have to hire more people. Probably the ambulance companies, the EMS, are going to have to too. Because, by the way, we will be using the EMS. They're trained paramedics. They're buzzing around town all the time. You know what? Why don't you go visit Nettie? We haven't heard from her in a couple of days. Make sure she's okay.
That's interesting.
Cheaper than them coming in the hospital. It profoundly changes the way we deliver care, and you need a larger affiliate so you can start to do networks because
Sorry.
This is and you can say, listen.
I thought I was behaving myself.
No, you weren't.
Sorry.
That's okay. Because it's so, but you're right, because it's so different. I'm telling you the way the world's going. And here's why.
Well, that's the house calls.
Big systems want a lot of hospitals, not because they want the bricks and mortar of the hospital. They don't want the hospital. They want the covered lives, because that's how they're going to make money. This is going to be about population health, about covered lives, about changing the way you deliver care.
Can I just ask you a question?
Sure.
Just because I'm sorry.
No.
If you're pointing me out.
No.
What do you do when the patient's not cooperating?
That is a
huge. Because this is like you're talking about partnerships here, but you know it's up to the patient. It's on the patient to follow through on all of this stuff
so,
and go to the appointments and such.
You're right. That's on us. And for us, to be successful financially, we have to solve those problems. I'll give you the most profound example. I'm very serious about this. Mental health, behavioral health, alcohol detox. Do we not have a problem in this community with those services? Do we not have enough supportive housing, transitional housing? We don't have anything close to it. Part of this state district program, that's one of the initiatives. There are about 25 initiatives you get to choose from. It's like a little game. You submit it. It's got a score. Here's what they want you to do. The behavioral health component is a huge piece of this application. We've got to figure out a way with our partners how to solve those problems. How do we make people compliant? And I can't tell you I've got the answers today, but we've got to do it.
So, in other words, you're saying that if somebody doesn't comply and doesn't answer that phone call that says, you know, we're recommending you going to see whomever. First of all,
so they make the appointment for you.
Yeah,
that's the kicker. They make the appointment.
They make the appointment for you. And then if somebody refuses the care, then what you're saying is that there'll be another aspect of this that would determine perhaps if they have maybe it's psychological or an issue that way as a reason why they would be
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying the behavioral health population, that segment of the population versus the medical surgical piece. What we've got to figure out, and I don't have all the answers of this, and this is what we have to figure out going forward. What we have to do is how do we incent the patient to do what's right for them? We may have to go visit them in their house. We may have to go pick them up. I don't know the answer.
I understand that, but my point being is that, part of our liberties as Americans here is that we have the right to refuse. To refuse, will there be penalties? Perhaps they would be denied for other treatment.
You can't deny them.
Okay.
So let's look at the balance. We want to reduce costs. Costs are driven, by the way, by a patient repetitively coming. I have a mental health patient, homeless person, who went to the ED 332 times last year.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that, 332 times. Is that a good use of money? Is that a good care plan? No, it's none of those things. So you're right. How do you somewhat try to take control of the patient's behavior in their best interest? They could say no. They could say no. They'll end up in the ED, so you're not going to reduce costs.
But it's through education.
It's through education.
People, I think they had a choice of going to a doctor or having an exam and taking care of whether it's heart or high blood pressure or diabetes, the usual things that get most people, then going to hospital.
Right.
It doesn't make sense, and that's what's killing the health system is people that do that.
What's that old commercial? The Fram oil filter. Pay me now or pay me later. See me now or see me later. There is a choice, but if the federal and the state government employers want to drive down the cost of health care, you have to keep people out of hospitals.
And that's where it's going.
How do you keep people out of hospitals? You keep them healthy. Now, a little bit odd for me to say as the CEO of the hospital, my goal is to reduce as much volume as I can. A little bit of a strange business model, but it's best for the community. So that's why we haven't landed on a solution yet, because there's so much going on in the external environment that's out of our control, whether it's the federal government mandating certain things, if it's the state saying you're going to do this over 5 years and we're going to throw a boatload of money at you to figure it out, if it's the affiliates all waiting to figure out what their network is going to look like, because there will be big systems over time controlling health care in the state.
Now this model, isn't your model. These are disincentives by the federal government.
Correct.
So
we're trying to adapt.
You're adapting or you're conforming. So I don't know if it's it's not fair to, and not insinuate, but it's not fair to ask him, you know, well, what about our personal freedoms or this, when he's got a business to run also. And we want you in our community. We want the hospitals here, in, you know, in this community. We don't want you to say, hey, this is too much. We don't have, we can't make any money, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But I just want to ask one question.
Go ahead.
The big yellow dot, $6.5 million awarded by the state, was that awarded to Health Alliance?
Yes, it was.
When was that?
That was in September of last year.
Oh, okay.
And that was to help us find an affiliate and get our physicians organized.
Oh, okay.
The state, by the way...
I don't understand me. Find an affiliate. You mean...
find an affiliate.
Join with another, you know, larger facility. Mm-hmm. But the thing that... The question we get the most is now that most people were... they accepted the fact that the Kingston Hospital was going to close. And that the benefit... Well, that was... That was very clear.
Right. Yes, and I don't know the answer to that yet, and I can
But this is where the confusion comes in with the Republic.
Yeah.
With the public. Because you're, all right, Kingston Hospital is going to close.
Right.
We're going to keep Benedictine open. Now, we're not so sure.
Because
I mean, that's what drives people crazy.
It makes you crazy. It makes me crazy. I'll be perfectly honest with you. Here's why we don't know the answer to that yet. In talking to an affiliate, the question becomes, and all the initiatives I described, including DSHRP, how small will the hospital have to be in 5 years to take care of the needs of the community? Not through the hospital, but through that medical perimeter. And that's going to drive which campus it is.
So the hospital will primarily just be surgical or emergency?
That's right. If you look at a timeline, it'll be complex surgeries. Yeah. Most medicine will be done outside of the walls of the hospital. Okay. People coming in for medical backs, and there's a lot of medical backs that come through the hospital, will no longer come through the hospital for medical backs.
I mean, now you have endoscopies and all those things are done in offices.
Exactly. So all of that starts to go out. Picture an ED. Picture a future ED, emergency department, where I like to use the example of four doors that you're triaged. If you're emergent, heart attack, traffic accident, whatever, trauma, you go into door number one because that's emergent care.
Okay.
Immediate. If you have a sprain, a break, something like that, you go into quick care, but it's not emergent. You go into door number two. If you have chest pain, you go into observation. That's door number three. If you've got the flu, the measles, you've got allergies, you go into the physician's office, which is bolted onto the ED. The idea being you get the care to the appropriate, high-quality, low-cost venue. That's the way we're going to change the delivery of care. The state likes what we're doing, and they're trying to help us.
So, question before I forget. You had mentioned that physicians would receive incentives for providing less care, correct? Well, but more quality care.
Higher quality, better quality outcomes.
In an environment where physicians are over-treated because of the fear of getting sued, how would you convince a physician to provide less care in such an environment that they're constantly over-testing and over in order to, you know, avoid that one that slips by?
So let me just correct that because I want to make sure I'm clear. We're not asking them to provide less. Less is never in the equation. It's the appropriate high quality that is evidence-based and produces good outcomes. So if Nettie is a diabetic, we want to see her A1C go down. If by coming to the physician's office multiple times, we can get her blood sugar down to a level that's controllable, that's a good outcome. Driven by metrics, driven by evidence-based, not less, better, and better outcome related. Then we're successful. That's the reward, because then she's better.
Sure. Now,
so it's never less; it's always better.
Okay. Also, I just quickly, what would your how do you feel about tomorrow as a result of perhaps bringing down some medical costs? Because you know, malpractice premiums are through the roof. because of what I just said. You know, doctors are always getting sued. We have trial attorneys that are getting rich off the fact that, you know, there's generally wiggle room in there for somebody to say either this didn't go right or whatever, and then, you know, so my question would be, you know, if you think in a collective with what you're proposing that that tort law reform would be you know, beneficial as a way to cap
absolutely,
you know, lawsuits and.
I agree. The number of lawsuits that even we have for things that you just scratch your head sometimes, I think it would be huge. Some of the settlements have gotten so large.
Sure.
The physicians and hospitals start to practice defensive medicine just in case.
Yeah.
You never want to be on a witness stand and say, well, you know what? While the patient was in the ED, if you just did this one more test, would you have found? Well, the answer is always yes, in hindsight. Well, then you never want to answer, I didn't do that test because. So it's important. I'm sorry, you did have a question. I kept talking. So I could talk forever. So.
You know, I'm going to need to talk in private because there's some stuff I really don't want to discuss here that directly relates to Kingston Hospital. You said you've been working there how long?
I've been here about almost 8 years. In this role, 9 months.
But with Kingston Hospital, how long have you been there?
Not 8 years.
Okay, so it was on your watch. Then you and I are going to have to talk. So I've discovered a lot of issues with healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a rare injury myself that isn't readily treated. It's not really treated. There's not experts for it in the United States. My father was the victim of some negligence and some insurance fraud at a nursing home out of county.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things relative. Today, I had a Senator, United States Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, representing the state of New York, came to Saugerties. I've been in touch with her office a couple times. Issues that will help out the Ulster County hospitals. I discussed with her personally today and her aides about equalizing the reimbursement rates.
Thank you.
For the Ulster County hospitals versus Dutchess County hospitals. I mean, that'll help things across the board. You know, what I will say to you in this room now is that if you walk into Kingston Hospital versus walking in Vassar Brothers Hospital, which I did myself a little less than 2.5 years ago, I had some issues which I'll talk to you in private about, and then you'll see where I'm coming from. But, I mean, our healthcare system...
Are you talking about on the floor or in the emergency
room? In the emergency room.
Well, I could tell you that I just had an experience in the emergency room, and I was impressed and surprised at the level of care and how quickly and the professionalism.
Oh.
I just was absolutely, really.
Yeah, 2.5, I can tell
that's
you, 2.5 years ago,
it.
ED was probably a mess. If I brought in the scores that we now get, that we don't do.
Well, I mean, it's. I would have rather, if not, I mean, if Jeanette is kind of sort of begging it out of me in a sense. But
I don't think this is the place to
But I think
it sounds like there's been some improvement.
We
in
have
last
we have changed. Listen, yeah. we're not.
But I think what I was going to say is what I was going to get to is the United States healthcare system is ranked 27th in the world. Okay, and there was a recent report that came out of seven, the top seven industrialized nations, our healthcare system was seventh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so sort of conversely touching on a point that Chairman Lopez made about overdiagnosis and what you were touching on before, I think the you know, out of fear of getting sued, I think actually what it has to do with is that Western-based medicine, Western-based medical schools, Western-based doctors aren't trained how to diagnostically diagnose people and think outside the box. They have a very low problem-solving intellect relative to doctors and surgeons in other parts of the world like Europe. That's the number one problem right there. So they've become over-reliant on diagnostic technology where they don't even know anatomy. They don't know how to do physical exams correctly. They don't know how to listen to their patients. Those are just some simple things that are going on, and it filters down. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of tort reform, now, I agree some of the high-end lawsuits you know, are problematic because it's driving up insurance premiums. However, there are so many cases of medical negligence, I know firsthand, where there is not enough money involved for a lawyer to want it to be their business. So, you know, in reality, I mean, I myself, you know, for myself personally and with my father, I'm looking at suing, you know, a doctor in a nursing home in small claims court and an insurance company. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't do right for us. I understand. Well, I mean, it was brought up that they should.
Well, he responded.
I'm just saying. I'm giving. I have some insights to these issues, and I just was saying I was responding to what was brought up.
And just to save time here a little bit, maybe if you wanted to. Have a private discussion afterwards.
I'd be happy to do that. Everybody may not. Healthcare is moving in this direction. If we don't adapt and adopt some of the things that are moving in the rest of the country, we will fail. And to say on my watch, it's not going to happen on my watch.
We won't have any hospital.
We're not going to have any hospital, and that's just not going to happen. We are talking to every single affiliate who will have us. I just came from Westchester Medical Center earlier this afternoon and talking to them. The Department of Health wants us to have a hospital in this county. It will look different in the future. I can't tell you how many years, but it will take time. But you will start to see some contraction. But you will see a different delivery surrounding the hospital. And I think that's good for this community. Because part of the reason people aren't healthy in this community is because they're eating... Somebody on 9W sells hamburgers and fries instead of eating the healthy produce that we generate in this community. It has to do a lot with obesity and habits. So we have to help change that, and we have to work collaboratively with the county to try to figure out how do you promote healthy living.
So basically, you're being driven by federal and state government. Is it federal government mostly or state?
Both. Mostly the feds are disincentives.
Medicare and Medicaid.
Medicare and Medicaid. But as soon as this starts to work, the private payers will jump on board because we'll all want to do this.
Yeah.
I'll have a conversation with my kind someday and go, hey, look, I have a value network with a tertiary and an acute care hospital, a group of physicians, and we can help drive down the cost to the county. But think about what that does for the county. If we get high quality, low cost, then you attract businesses. Businesses will want to come to this county because of its location, its beauty, all the positives, but there's a cost to coming. It's taxes and it's health care. And if we can do something about the health care piece, everybody's better off. Can't do it instantly. I can't do that.
What is the county providing Health Alliance to help meet your goals? I mean, you mentioned the county executive. I mean, a lot of what happens between probably you and the county executive's office isn't under the purview of the legislature.
Yeah.
But what can we do to kind of help you?
And that's a really good question.
To help us?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Right now, Mike is helping me. And we meet once a month. So he's always in the loop. He's helping me trying to find a solution to our MSA problem. And he's working to get Senator Schumer. I've been talking to Congressman Gibson and trying to get the two of them to work across the aisle, and if you think that's easy, to try to help us get some more reimbursement. That's probably number one ask. That's the number one ask. And in terms of the political help that I need, that when we come up with a solution, that I be able to articulate that that's good for the county and we get support for it. If I come up with a solution that everyone politically hates, it'll never happen.
Yeah.
So I probably need most of anything understanding and support. But I have to be able to tell you that it's good and you have to be convinced that it's good.
Well, thank you for sharing.
I appreciate
it. And it's a lot to think about.
There's a lot going on. That's why I said I'd be happy to come anytime as this starts to happen or we get closer to an affiliate, why we think this affiliate is better than that.
Another quick question. Is there any chance of getting any kind of, because I always hear the mayor saying he'd love to have, some kind of a medical school or a dental school or something to come in here. Is that any kind of a possibility or just a dream?
No, I think they're all possibilities. I don't think anything's a dream right now. We've got to repurpose the campus that we leave, whichever one that is. So there are probably five or six initiatives on the table of what you can do with that campus. Until they're not feasible, they're all feasible. So I think the answer could be a yes, but I can't put odds on it.
Yeah, right.
Unlike the Kentucky Derby, there's no clear favorite. Plus, it's in the startup New York, so it is in a positive economic zone. So we think that has some value.
Good luck.
We have to do better for this community. Thank you very much. If you have questions, if anybody wants a card, I'll give you one. If you know where to find me, otherwise, seriously, sure. I'll talk to anybody offline.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. We will move on. Chairman Steve Wright from the Trails Committee?
Trails Advisory Committee.
Trails Advisory Committee.
I've got a little paperwork. I'm not going to take a lot of your time. Here is a map that's basically the 10,000-foot view of our trail system. Red means it doesn't exist or it's planned. Green means no, it's there. I don't know if they use my yellow, because I have some sections in yellow on some of the trails. You can get through, but you wouldn't want to send anybody. And then I printed out our whole report. I made a color copy for the chairman. Everybody else gets grayscale. There are limits to my printer budget, so.
Thank you, sir.
That's all right. This meeting, I happen to print enough. Everybody have one? Okay. So if you have any specific questions, I'll answer those to the best of my ability, but we've really had a great year of growth. I'll just quickly say that the things that have happened have been wonderful. We couldn't have done it without the planning department. Access has improved over the past 2 years. They've just been willing to partner with us and help us get through the problems that would just stick there without the staff up that they did. So I didn't put a lot in there about how much help they have been, but when I can call up and get the answer to something immediately, it picks up the whole process. So as everyone knows, we've been able to connect up Gardner and Kingston this year with opening up the Rosendale Trestle and opening up Williams Lake, which was quite big. And that's under management, that problem of keeping people on the trail. And I'm part of that effort as well. And the thing to keep in mind is the Wallkill Valley Land Trust raised $1.5 million with OSI to get this done. This is not taxpayer money. This is fundraisers and donations and a lot of hard work. Switching corridors to the O&W-D&H corridor that runs from almost Kingston, really, all the way, hopefully, down to Allenville. We've had some good successes there. We've had a bridge get completed in Marbletown as a result of an ESF. We have another bridge just half a mile down. All the parts are there. We've got that $25,000 right-of-way agreement from Central Hudson in 1992 that our committee brought forward and actually got the check written for. The Green Line project and Kingston connectivity have come online and by the end of the year had received nearly $4 million in grants. So I've gone through and I've shown where things kind of fit into the non-motorized trail plan, if you want to reference that document, which is part of our origination of our committee. The one that I like is the Bluestone Wild Forest. If you're not a mountain biker, you don't know about Jockey Hill, but people really come from all over the Northeast to use that facility. And it's a nice little money engine for this area because those folks get hungry and they spend a lot of money. That's in the town of Kingston, actually. I think it is, yeah.
cities affecting.
And as far as the Ulster and Delaware quarter, our committee did review an independent study by Camoyan Associates about the viability of constructing the Catskill Mountain Rail Trail from Kingston to Bel Air, and what the economic effects of those items might be. So that, in a nutshell, is my report. I don't want to take a lot of your time. You have much more serious topics than rail trail. But I think this is an economic engine.
Yeah,
it's
something
positive.
Yeah,
absolutely. Get something
up there in
Florida. Yeah.
Nothing. I'm just saying.
We got you guys down there for you, and we just got to walk the side of the road.
The town of Morrison benefits tremendously from this. You know, it draws in a lot of people from the area. And the future development of Colonial Farms and... I think it's a really good. You know, it's funny because we had spoken, and I wasn't sure that this was the committee that you would have to come speak to. I thought maybe economic development was the only one, but you know, it really ties into walking and health and
health and
yeah, absolutely. And I think it's had it's reflected well on the people that use it. I'm on the trails, and I have this really cool chair. It has four independent motors, big knobby tires on it. I get right out there with the mountain bikers and I enjoy it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I heard a lot of positive news this past week with the Kiwanis. All the different, the marathon, a half marathon, sure. 5 mile, the 1 mile, and a lot of it went through the trails. Yeah. And I heard nothing but good things.
They ran through the recently opened Williams Lake section.
Yeah.
It's exploding now. If we can just keep up the momentum, it's important to connect it all up. Everybody says, well, don't you have enough trails? It's really when they connect, you just bring in a bigger crowd.
Go to a different place every time. It doesn't have to be the same trail all the time.
Exactly. And the state forest down in Wawarsen has recently been opened up to the Renegades Mountain Bike Club.
Sure.
We're going to run a race this coming weekend up in there. There will be another race later on in the season that's going to draw hundreds. And last year when I marshaled that race, I was interviewing people as they're going through. And there's a guy from Denmark, be in New York City. A lot of New York City, a lot of, and it's just, they're finding us. We're
absolutely
not sending them mailers.
Sure.
So,
and I want to thank you for the work you do on there. Sometimes it may go overlooked, but really, you guys do a tremendous job.
Well, we got the passion, and we're glad that everybody's kind of getting behind it now.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah. All good.
Yeah,
all good.
So if you want to stick around for a moment while we vote on your resolution.
This ties right into the report from the hospital.
Sure.
People more healthy.
Sure. It turns out that a half an hour of walking a day is the most healthy thing you can do for your body. That's
it.
You
really don't go to a gym.
Just walk a half an hour. Don't think about anything but walking. If you're lucky enough to be outside, see the birds, feel the air, it really does take you to a nicer place.
Walk responsibly. Walk responsibly. Don't go in the woods without protection.
Well,
there's a lot of ticks out there.
Yeah, it's fine.
Jesus, but you meant carry a gun or something.
So if you have any other questions.
Yes, so I'm going to move. Resolution 153 for discussion.
Cool. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm
second.
All out of connection.
And it's reestablishing the Ulster County Trails Advisory Committee. So, is there any discussion?
Well,
we're doing
very happy to support it.
Okay. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Very good.
Yes.
You get to continue chairing.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. It's trying to pass it on, but nobody seems to want to take it.
It's
one of those jobs that I need.
Right? Yeah, you might be right.
I enjoy that.
And you love the politics in it.
Yeah, you know me very well, don't you?
Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Take care. Thanks again.
All right. Here's the. We'll move on to Resolution 161. someone wants to move that.
I'll move.
Second. Very good. And this is approving a contract, and next is the $2,000.
50% federal, 50% state.
Nothing. We always like
that. Yay!
So, okay, if there's any discussion on that? If not, I'll vote.
Aye.
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 Very good. Pass. All right, and then we're going to...
Old business. I just touched on most of it before in here. I talked to Kirsten Gillibrand today about equalizing the reimbursement rate so that Ulster County hospitals would be in alignment with Dutchess County hospitals. I know that Bob Aiello and Terry Bernardo had sent a letter to the senators, respective senators Schumer and Gillibrand, like about 2.5 years ago. I remember seeing it in the paper. So I'm going the next step further, where I knew that she was going to be in Saugerties. It was called to my attention like two and a half weeks ago. So I called her aides in the last week, had two lengthy conversations with her aides, and then today I gave her some paperwork similar to what I gave to the committee here about the HIPAA reform. I talked to her personally about that today, and they assured me that they're going to look into it. Now, the reimbursement rates, that's something that Maurice Hinchy had worked on, too, also.
Oh, God, for like 20 years.
Yeah, now she said that they're aware of it. But, you know, Kirsten's a pretty, you know, she's a strong public servant, so maybe she'll, you know, with the climate, I don't know if the climate's any better or worse vis-a-vis, you know, after the Affordable Care Act, but maybe... you know, maybe it's another crack at it, and she'll give it her best shot. So, that's I did all that today.
Okay.
I find it interesting, though, if I read it right, and I didn't read it, you know, I didn't concentrate that much on it. But I thought, isn't there something with electric rates where they're, I forgot the name of them, where they're going to put us in
the
downstate. You know, area, right?
Yeah.
Well, why is it so hard then to put us in the downstate area for reimbursement to hospitals and nursing homes? I read that and I thought, isn't that interesting? They just did it like that with the cost of electricity. But when you're talking about, and this has been going on for a long, long time, trying to get them to recognize, to get, you know, to include us.
And it affects them adversely because obviously they had an net operating loss that was well documented, and then, you know, your ability to attract quality personnel, you know, doctors and nurses, it's based on the money that that's coming in from, you know, from reimbursement rates on Medicaid and Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
My dentist, who's based out of Marlboro, he's Canadian, relocated, married an American wife. His mother was an emergency room doctor at like Montreal General Hospital, and she relocated to the United States. She had job offers from Kingston Hospital and Albany Medical Center, and he told me, he said, the disparity in salary just she wanted to be closer. Yeah, I had a friend that just quit at Kingston Hospital as a nurse, and he just got a job at Albany Medical Center. You know, so
I knew nurses that went from just across the bridge, and I'm going back 20 years was a $5,000 difference in salary.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you lose them, because of the way that you're reimbursed. Yeah, I'll just give you a quick example just to show what he was talking about with the hospital, because I just had an experience with my brother being in the hospital. And first he was an inpatient, and it came time to discharge him, and his wife wanted to take him home. Well, he was seen by the doctor that's now in the hospital. And I happened to be there when she was very, very clear. She said, I will not discharge him home. She wouldn't personally, because his wife was 85 years old. She just had the shingles. She was in bad shape herself. I know that they have no children, that you don't have the family structure that you need to take care of him at home. And we're afraid he's already fallen twice. then you're going to fall again, and you're going to be back here in a week. So, you know, it took some thought, and finally, you know, she agreed for him to get the rehabilitation the best he can, to at least transfer from the bed to a wheelchair, so that, or a commode, so that he would be able to work. So they were not going to take that responsibility. Because if he got home and fell,
sure,
you could say, well, they knew that. Why did they send him home? So it's coming. It's incredible.
It is. Okay. Is there anything else?
No.
I'll make a motion for adjournment then.
Okay. I'll second.
Very good. All right.
So for the record, I voted yes on those two.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I was watching you. What time do you have, Chris? 7:20, thank you.
Meeting adjourned.